Juno Afternoon is made possible with support from Sentinel Coffee, serving Southeast with locally roasted organic coffee and door-to-door delivery. More at sentinelcoffee.com. I'm your host today, Shelley Delaney, and my first guests are Irene Morris with Alaska Wildlife Alliance, and Dr. Christina Eisenberg, the featured presenter for this month's Wildlife Wednesday. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Irene, to start us off, for those who don't know, could you briefly explain what is the Alaska Wildlife Alliance and what is Wildlife Wednesdays?
Okay. The Alaska Wildlife Alliance was started in 1978. We're advocates for Alaska's wildlife and healthy ecosystems to support them. Often the advocacy is on behalf of predators because they are often targeted and because they're critical role in their ecosystem. I'm a member of the board. I've belonged to the Wildlife Alliance before we even had a chapter here. But we have a Southeast chapter now, and we're the ones that put on Wildlife Wednesdays. Basically, we are advocates for Alaska wildlife. So that's what we do, whether it's legislative bills or court cases or education with the Wildlife Wednesdays. So we try to follow anything that would be affecting wildlife. Wildlife Wednesdays are Wednesdays they start in October and they go through March. And so they're always at the university, 7 o'clock, the first Wednesday of each month in the lecture hall in Egan Library. And there's always goodies there to eat.
Important to mention. And it's always such a treat when you bring your guests by Juno Afternoon. I get to learn so much from them, and it's always really fascinating stuff. So thank you for bringing Dr. Eisenberg, Christina. And Christina, you're the chief scientist for Earthwatch Institute. So please tell us about what that is. What is Earthwatch Institute?
Earthwatch Institute is a conservation science nonprofit that was founded in 1971, inspired by Earth Day. And the concept behind Earthwatch is, how are we going to save the planet? Well, we're going to empower scientists and citizen scientists to do it. So we were one of the first organizations doing citizen science. We fund science that is very rigorous, formally based, hypothesis-driven science that is addressing the conservation problems we have on the planet. We have 50 projects on 6 continents. So it's a global organization that is based out of Boston, and we have several offices throughout the world, such as Australia and Japan and India. And my job there involves overseeing all of the projects that we fund and supporting scientists. I'm working with my organization to identify what our priorities are. What are the most pressing conservation issues? And then putting out calls for proposals and then evaluating the ones that we get from scientists and deciding as a team what we're going to fund and then supporting development of their projects. So, for example, here in Alaska, we fund a sea otter project not far from Juneau, and Dr. Ginny Eckert, who is at the University of Alaska, is the principal investigator, the scientist leading that project.
Is that an icy strait?
Pardon me?
Is that project an icy strait?
Yes, it is.
Near Gustavus?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you have a big job, and so does your institute, but I think they're very lucky to have you at the helm.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. And you mentioned that you're based out of Boston, but this is not your first visit to Alaska, but it is your first visit to Juneau.
Yes. So I am a wolf biologist by training, and I was mentored by Tom Meyer, who was the chief of science in Denali. And I've spent time working in Alaska with him, and when I started becoming interested in becoming a scientist, what happened was I was a stay-at-home mom, and we were naturalists, so we were citizen scientists. We were the kind of family that counted all the birds on our land and, did surveys for, like Cornell Lab of Ornithology. And all of a sudden, wolves started running through my yard. And, my backyard is 2.5 million acres of wilderness in Montana, and we still have that cabin. And it's not Alaska, but it's a lot like Alaska because it is the big wild, and it's one of the wildest places in the lower 48. The density of grizzly bears there is higher than the density of humans, where I raised my kids. So all of a sudden, these wolves start running through my yard, and they weren't supposed to be there. And so we tracked animals. We learned how to track in order to keep our kids safe from all the bears and stuff, which we actually coexisted with very peacefully. And so I collected the hairs from the wolves that we had, you know, they ran while we were gardening across our yard, and they were chasing a deer. And they left our land and left their hair on the barbed wire fence. And then what happened was I went in and reported it to Fish and Wildlife. And at the time, Tom worked for Fish and Wildlife. And he looked at me after he examined the hairs, and he just said, "Want to track them for me?" And then he encouraged me to go to graduate school. And so I started my master's because he made me feel like I could do it. I had been out of school for decades. And then I got a PhD. And when I finished my PhD, I spent a bit of time in Alaska with Tom in Denali and looking at the carnivore conservation issues, particularly the issues with the wolves in Denali and the stampede and the wolf buffer zone. So that's some of my background.
Do you know much about the wolf population here in Juneau?
There is not a clear number that I've been given on it. Wolves are thought to be quite resilient and well established here. They're managed pretty intensively compared to how they're managed in the lower 48. And they have not been protected in the past like wolves in the lower 48 were protected. The wolves in my yard came down from Canada, so they were not reintroduced. But there's a lot of places where they've been reintroduced in the lower 48. I do know about the Alexander Archipelago wolves and that they are of a conservation concern because they've been identified as being a unique population that may be a distinct species. And there's a debate about that. And they're not as resilient as wolves typically are because they are more specialized wolves versus the wolves on the mainland tend to have, you know, broader, a lot more different types of prey that they can consume, for example, and a lot more room to roam.
Yes, that would make sense that they're isolated and in some ways more vulnerable.
Yes, exactly.
So your Wildlife Wednesday presentation takes place tonight at 7 p.m. in the Egan Lecture Hall. That's out at UAS. What is the topic of your talk? Is it about wolves or carnivores? Is it about Alaska?
It's about relationships because I'm going to be talking about the large carnivores in the West that live in Alaska. So brown bears, wolves, wolverines, and lynx, and what their conservation status is, what the policy is. I do a lot of work with Congress, and I'm also a Smithsonian scientist, so I'm very actively involved in advising our government on carnivore policy. And I wrote a book, The Carnivore Way, in which I write about this conservation status of and the biology of these species. So I'm going to be talking about that. But I've been working at Earthwatch now for over 4 years, and the work that I do is I found the same trends globally. So the issues that we're having with carnivore conservation in places like Alaska or Montana and Wyoming are the same when you look at lion conservation in Kenya, or wolf conservation in Mongolia, or jaguar conservation in the deep Amazon. And I've been in the field, you know, with the scientists that we fund there, and it's ultimately about human communities, and especially about that interaction between subsistence communities. And I come at this as I'm a hunter, you know, so I can understand, and I'm also Native American. So I understand subsistence rights and, you know, how do we find that balance between honoring those subsistence rights and conserving animals that are sometimes scapegoated? So that's what I'm going to be talking about, the lessons I've learned globally as well as locally.
That is really interesting stuff. I think the audience will be riveted. What do you hope that your listeners will learn from your talk? What do you want them to take away?
That everything is connected, that we need to go beyond coexistence to reciprocity, that the importance of traditional ecological knowledge that indigenous people have had about the animals that live on the land and how those animals are connected, how a wolf is connected to songbirds and butterflies, and how everything that we do affects everything else. That's the main takeaway message.
As a hunter and as a tracker, have you had any excitement on any of those adventures, any close calls? Do you have a story you want to tell us?
Oh, my gosh. So I have about 200 grizzly bear encounters a year in the field, in the bush. And
I have never had a single one.
And I work with wolves that are not human habituated, so not the wolves that are, you know, visitors see in a national park. And I've had wolves bring me meat, you know, like they will kill something and bring me and my field crew a hunk of meat as a gift. I've had astonishing things happen that have to do with the communication between species, that we have somehow, that relationship has become dysfunctional in our society. And I'm not talking about New Age romanticized notions about our kinship to spirit animals. I'm talking about how Aboriginal humans interacted with the whole landscape for their subsistence.
And have you ever been scared?
No.
Wow. We've got some photographs on the website, ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. These were taken by you, I believe. And there's a couple wolves and some grizzlies and stuff. Do you want to talk a little bit about these photos, where you were? And
well, actually, I did not take those photographs, but they are photographs that were shared with me that I have the right to use, and some of them appeared in my book, The Carnivore Way.
Okay.
The top left is one of the Denali wolves. I believe it is from one of the packs that, well, that was taken on the road, that, you know, one of the most viewed wolves. The image on the next to it, the wolf image, is also a Denali wolf. The image below that, those are grizzly bears from the Banff area, and that was taken by a friend of mine. And that wolverine was taken image is from Montana. So, yeah.
So, your neighbor. Well, thank you so much for sharing all that information. Irene, I really like your friend. She's super
interesting. Yeah, we've been having a lot of fun.
Well, thank you so much for getting her to Juno. Does the Alaska Wildlife Alliance have anything else going on that you want to mention while you're here today?
Actually, we are recruiting for board members. If anyone would like to come to Wildlife Wednesday tonight and or either volunteer, or if you'd like to be a board member, we're looking for new board members. I'm going to mention, too, that Christina will have her books for sale tonight, too.
Oh, wonderful. So you can go and purchase it. Are you signing any of them?
Yes, I will. And I have to say what a pleasure it is to be here and how much I've learned. I've been here, actually, for 3 or 4 days from the local community and some of the AWA board members about these connections that are so important between humans and nature.
Well, you're in good hands, and I'm glad you're having a great experience here in Juno. And welcome.
Thank you. Enjoy
the rest of your trip and have a great talk tonight at 7 o'clock, UAS Egan Lecture Hall. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.